Oh, I don't know what happened to the music there for a second. The music cut out, but we are also back. It is the Toll Shed. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Toll Shed. Our first one in a couple weeks. A lot to recap for happening with men's basketball. Of course, you know, their quarterfinal game, one of the best games that I've ever seen at Robert Morris that will be, I'm sure, we're going to be able to talk to today, Of course, then the semifinals, they fell to Fairleigh Dickinson. We're going to get into a little bit more discussion on that as well that happened there. As their conference season, at the very least, because there's rumors that they, that Andy Toole, well, they're actually not rumors because Coach Toole confirmed that they have looked into the CIT on his radio show at the very least, so they might be having playing in a postseason tournament. We will get into more of that. Also on his radio show, he talked about how they are trying to get Malik Petaway to come back for one more year, and that's that will be a big addition for the Cornelius next year. We'll get into that. Matty McConnell, his career possibly over for Robert Morris. We're going to talk about his legacy. Going through our team MVPs and going to preview what we're going to talk about next week, because it's March, guys. It's March, best time of the year for college basketball. And that's all going to be on this episode of the Toll Shed. So there were two games over the past week, obviously. Robert Morris men's team made it to the NEC playoffs. They took on St. Francis Brooklyn in the quarterfinals, and then they took on Fairleigh Dickinson. Because, spoiler alert, they won in the quarterfinals and fell to Fairleigh Dickinson in the semifinals. So, Matt, would you like to do a quick recap of the two games?
So, you know, you said it before, you know, you said in the intro about the quarterfinal game against St. Francis Brooklyn. And I would have to agree that it's probably one of the best men's basketball games that I've seen as a student at Robert Morris. I mean, they came back from, I don't even know what they were down by, 15 or so. They end the game. Josh Williams and Matty McConnell both had 21, and it went down to the wire. An overtime win. I think they were down by, 14 or 15 in the second half. I'm not – or at halftime.
I think it was 15.
15?
Okay. Sorry about that. I had your mic. I had your mic muted for a second.
Sorry, we don't want to hear what he has to say anyway. But
I don't have any valid points.
And then, unfortunately, their season came to an end. Well, we thought before this whole CIT talk, but – season comes to an end against Fairleigh Dickinson. They fell 66-62. Had a 10-point lead in the second half that they blew. But again, Matty McConnell had 17 points. We talked about how he loves playing in the tournament.
He made the NEC tournament team.
He did. He was the
only player that didn't play in the championship game to make it.
That sounds about right. But yeah, I mean, he does play terrific in the postseason, and he has for the last 3 years, definitely. I'm not entirely sure what he did his freshman year.
His first year, he only scored a point in the game. So
yeah, that sounds about right. But you know, we talked about it before, Logan, what it takes for the Colonials to win. And, I mean, against Fairleigh Dickinson, they shot 50% against Robert Morris, and they shot 27 free throws, converting 22 of them. So those are two things to look at, and the reason why the Colonial season came to an end. And their chances of going dancing, as we say, came to an end this past Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that first game, that quarterfinals game, though, against St. Francis Brooklyn, I mean, I think hands down it's probably the best basketball game that I've at least seen. Temple, were you at the game? I didn't know if you were at the game or not.
I was not at the game, but I watched the entire game.
So how was your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, it was – I definitely wish I would have been at that game. It seemed like it was an incredible game. I mean, they were down 10 points, and you really didn't think they were going to win that game. And then all of a sudden, they caught fire in the second half, and they were getting stops on defense. And all of a sudden, it just turned their way. It seemed like it was a great atmosphere in the NAC. Sad that I will no longer be a student in able to attend games in the NAC for free, but that's okay.
No, yeah. And I'll just say real quick, Logan, we talked about that game. It was crazy. I left that game with a headache because I was yelling so loud. But with 4 minutes and 8 seconds left, the Colonials were down 55-45. I'm not sure what their percentage of winning. I think you have that pulled up, what their percentage of winning was.
I do have it pulled up.
But Matty McConnell converts a layup with 15 seconds left. And then Malik Petaway, which is probably the biggest play of the game, Malik Petaway with a block with, I think, 2 or 3 seconds left in the game to force the game into overtime. And once they got to overtime, the Colonials kind of dominated it.
So with 4 minutes left in the game was the highest win probability for St. Francis. 95% win probability with 4 minutes left in the game. And of course, if you, I mean, you guys obviously, you guys at home can't see the graph that I've pulled up on Ken Palm, but the graph absolutely drops
almost 90 significantly, degrees.
Significantly as Robert Morris. I mean, right out of the gate from overtime, you can see it was just a total collapse from St. Francis Brooklyn's part. I think you know even at the start of overtime when there was you know a violation on the jump ball and Robert Morris got to start with the jump ball. Mm-hmm. And from there on, like you said, Matt, from the layup on to tie it, the big block by Petaway, and from then on, it was Robert Morris's game. It was controlled by Robert Morris. In the second half, too, the second half significantly. I mean, it was, you know, in the second half, Robert Morris outscored them 34-19.
Yeah.
It was a very well-played second half, and, you know, it was tied for the third largest comeback in NEC in Robert Morris history, in terms of a halftime. They were down by 15 at half. And there's so much that you can talk about this game. I mean, some players significantly stood out. You know, Matty McConnell, 10 for 10 from the foul line. That right there is a big reason why they won.
Mm-hmm.
21 points and his highest postseason total. And that's a guy that's been has played very well. Like we've talked about, outside of that first game, hasn't scored less than 17 points in his postseason career at Robert Morris, outside of that freshman year game, mm-hmm. of course, when he only scored one. Josh Williams played significantly. There were transitions where he had those back-to-back threes that were very, very important for the game. 21 points total for him in the game. Charles Bain also played well. I mean, he was a big reason why they didn't fall too far out of it in the first half. 13 points for him. He had 6 rebounds. Which was second. Charles Bain and Josh Williams tied for second in the team in rebounds with 6 each. Petaway and Matty McConnell first in the team in rebounds in that game with 7. So a very, very well-played game from both of them. Now, of course, the team ended up falling in the next game against Fairleigh Dickinson. Now, Curtic, obviously we weren't at the game being that it was in New York, but do you guys have any thoughts on the game itself?
You can do, Temple. You look like you had something to say.
Yeah, I watched that game. I thought the team played well. It's just in the second half, the shots were just falling for Fairleigh Dickinson, in particular Darnell Edge, who is arguably their best player. It just seemed like
is their best player. Hey, yeah.
It's arguable.
It's interesting that you say that. They actually shot worse. I mean, they still shot well in the second half. They shot 50% overall, but from three-point line, they were down 11 points in the second half. But the big difference that I think to make...
The free throws.
Now, they shot 81% in the game. They've made 22 free throws total, 14 of them being in the second half. Now, that is the big difference when you look at the game. Robert Morris, they didn't shoot bad from the foul line, but they...
6 for 8, though.
6 for 8 compared to 22 for 27. I mean, that's a big difference. You know, when you get into the, I mean, you talked about earlier in the year about foul trouble and getting into foul trouble. I think it was our last episode, actually.
It's funny how whenever we talk about stuff like that, you see it just play out in the game. And then you just go, yep, that's exactly what we said. If we said we can limit that, if the team can limit that, they're going to win. And then, you know, they don't limit that, then they lose in the semifinals.
Refs.
Yeah, it's all the refs. Conspiracies, right?
Some other issues in that game in terms of why Robert Morris fell for that one. In terms of rebounds, they weren't out-rebounded significantly, 29-23. That being said, only Giannis Bendy having more than 3 rebounds on the team. I mean, it was pretty fairly spread out. But
they shot 50% from the field. Fairleigh Dickinson.
Shot 50% of the field. And not like Robert Morris shot bad. They shot, you know, 42% from the field, which is not bad by any means. They shot 46% from three-point line in the second half, although only 25% from the three-point line in the first half. Granted, they only attempted 8 shots, but, you know, 25% is a big difference from the 44% that Fairleigh Dickinson shot in that same half. Matty McConnell again performed well in the postseason game in terms of scoring 17 points, only 1 turnover, generated two of them for Robert Morris. He played a very, very well game. four assists. That was the team high in that game. That's that was actually the game high overall. And besides him, though, Charles Bane, 10 points. Nobody else on Robert Morris scored more than 10 points. So, again, we talked back.
This is all in the second half, right?
This was total.
Maddie had 17.
Maddie had 17. I said that.
I thought you just said Charles Bane had 10.
No, I said Charles Bane was the only other player and Robert Morris to score more than 10 points. He scored 10 points in the game. But, no, that goes back to the point that we made last week in the sense that, you know, when it's one guy doing a lot of the scoring for Robert Morris, it's difficult for this type of team to end up pulling away.
You know, you talked about it, and people talked about, you know, the NEC. You only make the tournament, the NCAA, that is, if you win the tournament in the NEC. You know, the regular season doesn't really matter, but you see in these playoff games how much it really does matter. I mean, RMU is down by 15 points. And because, you know, they had the home crowd advantage, it was loud. Of course, they're playing in a little rec center. They were able to just – and once you score and you're on like a 5-0 run, then, man, all the momentum's your way. And that's the same thing that we see in this Fairleigh Dickinson game too. The Colonials were up 45-35, and then Jahlil Jenkins hits a three for Fairleigh Dickinson. Very good point guard, played, I think, a sophomore. But, I mean, RMU obviously keeps scoring, but – shortly after that, within the next 2 or 3 minutes in the game, boom, the game's about a 3-point game instead of a 10-point game. The Colonials couldn't pull away, and I think that it's credited to the fact that Fairleigh Dickinson played better in the regular season and had a home game. I really think that granted they beat St. Francis at St. Francis to win, but still, I really think that the home game for Fairleigh Dickinson really guided them to the win, for sure. I think that if that game is played in Moon Township, I think the Colonials take it.
That's Hoop Township to you.
Hoop Township, you're right. You are right. But it's a shame because, you know, they're up by 10 with 10 minutes left, and you really think that they're gonna pull away and win it. But we can, you know, kind of segment. So we keep talking about these games and how it ended their season. So let's just talk about the season. Josh Williams led the entire team in scoring, averaged 13.9 points a game, made how many three-pointers did he make? 96 this year on 247 attempts, shot 39% from three. Matty McConnell, 10.2 points per game. Charles Bane, 10.2 points per game. Then Malik Petaway, 9.8 points per game. Then John Williams, Kobe Thomas had 7.5, and then John Williams had 6 points a game, but then you've got to factor in the fact that he had 137 total assists and – you know, stuff like that, that kind of boosts what he did this year. So, Temple, who are you going to give, or who's their standout player this year?
Well, we're not thinking about defensive statistics, too.
We're just going to talk about scoring right now. Who's your standout player on the offensive end?
My team MVP, incorporating all factors into it, is Josh Williams. It seemed like whenever the team really needed a boost, he was the main guy they could count on to score for most of the season. I know Maddie performed well offensively in the playoffs, but not necessarily as well during the regular season, only averaged 10.2 points per game, which is a decent number. But I think this team went as Josh Williams went, so I'd say Josh Williams team MVP.
See, I didn't say that, and I'll get there, Logan. The Maddie McConnell did end the season with 59 steals, which I'm sure you have KenPom pulled up that you're going to tell me what that is in the nation.
Top 100.
Yeah, top
70, actually. He was second on the team, though, in steal percentage.
Who was above him, John Williams?
No, Malik Petaway finished 44th in the country in steal percentage, so top 50 in the entire nation.
All right. See, Josh Williams is a team MVP, in my opinion, but he had 79 turnovers this year compared to his 76 assists. I mean, that's a negative assist to turnover ratio.
Yeah.
Josh Williams did commit a lot of turnovers, and granted, you kind of let that slide, but except for the 3-point scoring for him, he didn't really contribute in many other ways.
That's fair.
He took a total of 373 shots, but 247 of them were 3-pointers, and he only averaged 3 rebounds a game. Only had 33 steals compared to, we talked about Maddie, who had 59. So he had less steals than his brother John as well. So I think, I mean, Josh Williams is, of course, a great player, and he was by far the best shooter on the team. But when we talk about defensive statistics, I'm going to say that the team MVP is Matty in terms of scoring and defense, because he really led the team in terms of leadership this year. I think that without Matty, the team doesn't perform as well in the regular season or in the postseason, in that matter. Just a true leader on the court this year.
I think both are good picks. I think you can make the argument for Josh Williams. I think you can make the argument for Matty McConnell as well. They both had very, very good seasons. I'm going to say Malik Petaway. And I'm going to use, you know, the combination of every statistic that we have available, from analytics on KenPom to the stuff on the Army Athletics, from the basic points. Now, 9.8 points, that's fourth on the team. That doesn't really it's not a bad number for college basketball, but it's not, obviously, it's not top three on the team. It's not one that really jumps out of you. That's being said, you know, like you pointed out with his Josh Williams turnover ratio, that's why he actually has a lower offensive rating than Petaway does in terms of KenPom. It's higher. Now, that's not the only thing I'm going to use, because Petaway actually doesn't have the highest offensive rating on the team. He's actually third on the team behind Charles Bane. I'm sorry, fourth on the team. But if you want to count Chris Coleman, he didn't play enough possessions, in my opinion, to in terms of the other guys. But Giannis Mendy, 105.2, and Charles Bane above him as well. And even Matty McConnell, actually, too, has a higher offensive rating. But in terms of everything else, I mean, you look at defensively. He finished just outside the top 100 in blocks, in block percentage, in the entire nation. Finished top 50 in steal percentage in the entire nation. He was the most used, in terms of possessions used when they were on the court, he was the number one player on the team to be used the most. So I got to go with Petaway. I mean, I think Josh Williams is a very good pick. I think Matty McConnell is a very good pick. I can't speak ill of either of them in terms of this season. I think you even could make an argument, you know, for Charles Bane. I mean, that's another player that you can make an argument for. But in my personal opinion, I think if we're picking a team MVP about who is the most valuable player this year, who's the most consistent, who is the player that I would take, I'm from and looking at both sides of the court, looking at both offensive and defensively, I'm going to go with Malik Petaway.
You know, I like the pick of Malik Petaway, but I really think that the rebounds don't really stand out for him. He only had 5.1 average per game compared to, I mean, Matty had 4.7.
Yeah, but a lot of that was how much playing time. If you look at how much he was on the court, he actually finished top 200 in the entire NCAA in that.
Well,
if you factor in how much time he actually spent on the court.
We should also talk about, I mean, the issue with Malik Petaway this year was his inability to play defense without fouling. He led the team in fouls, had almost 194, and there was over 10 games, I think there were 11, that he had at least 4 fouls. So you look at why he didn't get minutes, it's because he's consistently fouling people in the paint. When we look at, you know, why did they shoot 27 free throws? Fairly Dickinson, that is. I mean, it contributes to the fact that we had two forwards this year that fouled a lot. And I get it. That's going to be your positions that foul a lot. But that definitely caused some problems for the team this year.
I mean, every player we mentioned and every player on every team has a flaw. I mean, that's just reality. Every player on every team had a flaw. I just think when you look at overall game and you look at some of the stuff, you know, his turnover rate, lowest on the team. His block rate,
you would hope,
top in the country. I mean, yeah, that's true, but you know, it's still significantly low that it's among the best in college basketball, and it's top 500 in college basketball. You look at his block again, just outside top 100. Steals top 50. His offensive rebounds and defensive rebound possessions, in terms of how much he was actually on the court, both top 200 and just outside the top 200 as well in terms of college basketball. I think, I mean, and even, you know, 9.8 points per game, played very well. He's the most used player when he's on the court. I think, now that being said, obviously the player that played the most minutes this year was Josh Williams too. So that's another, again, you can go back to the Josh Williams, you can make an argument for Josh Williams. I'm not saying that you're wrong, because I think you can very well make the argument for Matty McConnell. I do 100%. And I think very well you can make the argument for Josh Williams. I just think, in my opinion, if we have to pick one, this is the person that I personally would go with, because in terms of this year, he was the most well-developed players on both sides of the court.
Yeah, I agree. I just think there's some intangibles that you work in to make your decision. That's why I went with the person that I went with.
I'm not saying you made a bad pick or anything. It's a very you can make the case for any of them, and I also think you can throw Charles Bane in the mix as well because he also had a very, very good season this year.
Yeah, for sure.
But moving on though, now we hinted at the potential of the season being extended. Actually, before we get into this, why don't we talk about the postseason? Because I don't think we've talked about it a lot. Obviously, McConnell played very well in the postseason, enough so that he was the only player not to play in the championship game to be named to the all NEC postseason roster. So I just want to ask you, Matt, did that have any decision making in terms of you picking him as your team MVP? Was his performance in the postseason?
Yeah, I think that you have to factor that in when you make your decision, because if say Josh Williams put up a goose egg in both games, how could you say that he's a team MVP if he doesn't show up in the two most important games you play all season? And like we said, Maddie the last 3 years has been the best player in the postseason for the Colonials, and that's just the nature of it, and that definitely factors into how you make your decision for that, or how I made my decision for that.
Temple, were you impressed by the way that McConnell played in the postseason this year, or did you just think, it's more of the same?
No, every year it impresses me. It makes me think, like,
what if he did that every time?
What if he did this all during the regular season? Like, he's averaging, like, I don't know what his average is, but you said he only scored less than 17, like, once.
In the postseason, in the past three years. Past four, and that was his first year. So, since his sophomore year, he has not scored less than 17 points
in
the postseason.
In the regular season, he has a career average of, hold on, let me see, less than 10. Yeah, 8.8 points per game for his career, but in the postseason he's scoring 17 a game.
I mean, to be fair, it's a lot more difficult to do that, and you play 30 games in the regular season as opposed to six career postseason games.
Still, though, I mean,
there are players that are just like that. They kick that extra gear. Those players are very valuable to a team. The ones that play significantly better and play the top of their game every single year.
Yeah,
and
you might say they're team MVPs.
And it's usually the
my team MVPs just play to their best of their abilities all the time. So they can't kick it an extra gear because they're always playing at the highest.
I mean, this season, to be fair, I don't think there was really that many times where all three of our picks, didn't play near the best of their ability. They all had really, really good seasons this year in terms of it's tough to criticize. I think personally it's tough to criticize how the team did this year. I think they finished where they should have finished. They were clearly one of the top four teams in the NEC. The second half of the NEC regular season, I think you can find some criticism there in the fact that they were at one point were three games up on the rest of the team and on the rest of the teams in the NEC, and then they finished with the four seed. That being said, they were the number four seed going in the playoffs. They were knocked out in the second round of the playoffs, which is where the number four team, if everything goes well, will be knocked out. They played very well in both games in the playoffs, especially the second half of both games in the playoff. And I mean, you look back at some of their other games, we were all in Louisville. They played very, very well against the team that was ranked this year. They played very, very well against USC. They played, and then they had some struggle games, like, for example, Drexel, where they played, they struggled to, and they ended up getting blown out by Drexel. So, but I think overall, if we're looking at the season as a whole, I mean, you guys may disagree with me, but I don't think there's really anything to say that, I think this team played to their expectations. I think they should be proud of the performances that they put up in the postseason at the very least. I honestly do, because Fairleigh Dickinson, there's a reason they're the two seed.
I agree.
There's a reason they won the NEC. They were the better team. That's why they won the NEC. And RMU played them tough. They lost by 4 points. They shot very well in that game, especially the second half. Defensively, they generated some turnovers against a team that, again, they shot 50% in that game. It's tough to beat a team when the team's on fire. And they held a team that was shooting 50% to 66 points. I think they played well in both games. I mean, maybe if you want to criticize their performances in the first half of both of those games, that's one thing. But as a whole, I think that there's I know the players are probably disappointed that they didn't get the NEC title, because they were clearly one of the four teams that were, I think, good enough to get that NEC title. But as a whole, I really don't think I wouldn't chalk this up as a bad season. This was a very good season, I think, for the Colonial basketball team. No,
I don't think it's a bad season, but it's disappointing because you have a 10-point lead with 10 minutes left in a semifinal game. You need to win that game. And I know we talked about, you know, they played well, and it doesn't really matter where you're projected. I think that the Colonials had some of the best talent. I think that St. Francis had the most talent on any basketball team this year. And I thought the Colonials were second. Fairleigh Dickinson's good. I think they had one of the best players in Darnell Edge. He was the best three-point shooter in the league. But
conference, you mean? Yeah.
The conference, the league. But to sit here and say, like, oh, you know, the Colonials had a good season. They weren't projected to do that well.
I mean, they
lost.
They were projected. They were projected to be. They were projected to finish right where they did. I don't think there's anything
they were
you
average.
Can say.
They were given expectations and they were average in that. Like, they didn't exceed expectations, in my opinion, because if they do the exact same as what they were projected to
do, but they didn't disappoint.
They did disappoint. They lost. They blew a 10-point lead in the semifinal game. Of course, that's disappointing.
I mean, blowing 10-point leads in in a half
in 10 minutes. Yeah, I don't think that's not that. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I agree with Temple on that. 10 points in 10 minutes. I mean, come on. That's 1 point a minute. That's in college basketball. We've seen crazier comebacks before. We've seen that. We saw the Colonials make a crazier comeback the weekend before.
They were the better team.
I think in this week, Fairleigh Dickinson was, and I think again, I don't think that I'm not going to say they blew. I mean, obviously it's a double digit lead, but 10 minutes left is a lot of time, especially in college basketball. Especially with a team that was shooting 50%, you know, it's tough to hold a 10-point lead with 10 minutes left when your opponent is shooting the ball 50%. That's really tough
to
do.
Also goes back on your defense. If you're not contesting the shots well enough, then they're going to shoot 50%. Just because they shot 50% doesn't mean that they were playing good defense. They should have been playing terrible defense. But
I don't know. A lot of the other factors, I mean, you look at some of the other factors in terms of being defensive. I mean, they had more, they generated more turnover, they generated more steals than the other team. They held a team. I think it's impressive that they held a team that shot 50% to 66 points. I think that's impressive, personally. I think if a team shoots 50% of points, makes 50% of their baskets, they should at least get 70 points, in my opinion. So I think it's impressive. Their defense did good enough. They put themselves in a chance to win. Again, yeah. I think it goes back to the fact that, you know, Robert Morris, they clearly spread the ball around well. Every single player that, you know, played in that game scored at least once. But when they don't have, you know, those two, three guys, when they don't have that Petaway, when they don't have – I mean, they have McConnell in that game, but when they don't have Petaway, when they don't have Josh Williams, when they don't have those guys step up and put up 12, you know, 14 points, get double digits of points, it has been tough for them to win this year without, you know, a second go-to scorer in the game. And I think that was their big issue in the game. Do I think that means that, you know, those particular players played bad? No. Again, they spread the ball around. Overall, you know, their shooting was very, very good. They shot 38% from threes, 42% from field from overall. That's a good game. That's not a bad game. Free throw percentage was 75%. Of course, they only had 8 free throws. That's the big difference, too, is their free throws. When your opponents get, you know, 27 free throws attempts and you get 8, it's very tough to win.
Games like that.
It's very tough to win when that happens, and that's on Robert Morris. I'm not gonna say that is on Robert Morris, Curtic. I agree with you there. That's, you know, because obviously in order to get those free throws they have to be fouled. So yeah. that is on Robert Morris. But it's really tough for me to criticize their performances this year and in these two games.
It's just disappointing because you know that.
It
RMU,
is.
RMU basketball is the flagship sport at the university, and to go the last 4 years without having a regular season or postseason championship is disappointing because they have all the resources that they need. The athletic department gives them all the resources that they need. And to go the last 4 years, they're in the semifinals the last 3 years, but I'd say they weren't even that close. They go to the semifinals, I get it. You know, that's only one of 4 teams, but they didn't finish in the top 3. Any of the past 4 years, I think it's just a disappointing last 4 years for Robert Morris men's basketball.
I think that's fair to say. They were like basically a powerhouse in the NEC for years before that. I think they had, they have the most NEC titles, I believe. So I mean,
it's either them or LIU Brooklyn. I don't know.
So we're running a little bit low on time, a little bit quick on time. We're actually already at 30 minutes of our episode, so we will have to be cutting a couple of things short. So first, we're going to talk about the potential return of Malik Pettaway. Now, he was my team MVP, so I think you can already tell about how I think he'll help the team next year and how important he will be if they can somehow get him back to come for next year. So, Curtic and Temple, how do you think that the team next year, which I think regardless of Malik Pettaway, is very, very talented if the roster stays together. Now, of course, some players could transfer out. Some players could transfer in. They can get some recruits. Well, I mean, player transfer in, they won't play, but they can, the new recruits, we don't fully know who's coming in that recruiting class. But do you think, how important is it for Pettaway to come back for this team? Do you think that they can win the NEC without him, or do you think they need him to win the NEC?
I think that,
assuming everybody else on the team stays,
I think that, I mean, obviously having Malik Pettaway is beneficial. He's your center. He's one, he's your best, I'd say he's your best bid man. He's beneficial, but I think RMU needs a pure scorer in order to be...
Well, they'll still have Josh Williams coming back, too.
I mean, like, not like a shooter, but like a scorer, a playmaker, because that's what Darnell Edge is for Fairleigh Dickinson. That's what Keith Bratston was for St. Francis. So I think that's what RMU needs to be successful next
year. Do you think there's somebody on this roster now that could do that?
No.
You don't think Josh Williams or, you know, Kobe Thomas or...
Josh Williams is your shooter, and that's what he is, and he does a really good job at that, but he's not your scorer. He's your shooter, which are two completely different things. If Charles Bain maybe might be that guy, but I think that if they either did a transfer in or a freshman that is just a pure scorer is what RMU needs to be successful.
RMU had those guys, but they all left.
Yeah, they had a Deshaun Burke. I'm saying like a player like Deshaun Burke. That
Marquise Reed.
Do you think they did better last year with Deshaun Burke than they did this year without Deshaun Burke?
I mean, they did the same. They both lost in the semifinals, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, and I think last year basically everyone on the team was new almost. This year they had more returners than the prior year, so I think the continuity helped, but they definitely could use a player like Deshaun Burke.
I mean, every team can use a player like Deshaun Burke. I mean, who wouldn't want a guy that could score just under 20 points a game? I mean, I agree with both of you only because it'd be dumb not to agree with both of
you. That's what winning teams have, though.
I don't think it's necessary. I think they were in the mix this year without him. Would a Deshaun Burke like player have gotten them to the championship? Probably. But could they have gotten to the championship with this team? I also think they could have.
But they didn't.
I'm not denying that. But do I think that they could have won that game? I do think they could have. They didn't. Yes, they did it. But do I think they were in that game? I do. So for next year, I don't think they necessarily need a player like that. Assuming everybody returns, of course, we don't know if players will transfer out. I believe there's been a player to transfer out of Robert Morris each year of the past two, three years. You guys have to correct me. You've been here longer than I have.
But yeah, there's definitely been at least one player every year.
So it will be interesting to see if guys transfer out or if guys stay. If Pettaway comes back, I think that's a huge, huge boost to the team. I think Josh Williams stepping up and being more consistent this year as opposed to last year. I mean, next year as opposed to this year would really help the team. And I think he could be the scorer that, you know, you think that they need. In terms of, you know, obviously the big loss, if they had to replace Pettaway, I think, you know, Charles Bain could do it. I think they could replace him. I don't think it won't be the same production. It will be difficult because he is their best big man. But I think I think when time comes around for conference season, I think that they'll be fine. In terms of replacing McConnell, I mean, that just, you know, gives more minutes for some of the guys. I like Dante Tracy. I think Dante Tracy, I mean, he had his struggles this year, but I think overall he is a good player that could replace a Matty McConnell-like player. And I like the team moving forward. I think, you know, losing McConnell and potentially Pettaway are two big losses, but I like the talent moving forward. Last question, just real quick. Legacy. Now McConnell, we've talked about the last 4 years. Overall, you know, you look at his numbers, he had a good career. He played very well in the postseason, scored 1,000 points. That's was one of 13 players, I believe, to do that in RMU history. Also had 500 rebounds, one of very, very small group of players to do that at Robert Morris. That being said, no NEC titles, which, you know, a lot of people, that is a very big, I mean, that's obviously a huge deal. So the legacy of Matty McConnell, when you graduate Robert Morris, if both of you are graduating, how are you guys going to remember him?
You know, I'll definitely remember him because he always seemed like he was just giving everything he had on the court, and he really bought the intensity on the defensive end, and it just always seemed like he was really into the games. He was passionate. He was pumping up the crowd, so I'll certainly remember that. In terms of his legacy outside of what I'll remember, I'm not certain that he'll have much of one necessarily, just because the team didn't perform well, and I think that hurts his cause. And he didn't necessarily put up offensive numbers.
I mean, 1,000 points is...
1,000 points when you play 4 years is...
That's still tough to do. It's still tough. It's
tough to score 8.8 points per game?
Yes. For 4 years, when you don't get a lot of minutes your first year?
He got a lot of minutes.
Exactly. He started straight from the year. So I think not a lot of players start from the first year.
Wait, that made your...
No, but my point is that it's uncommon because there's not a lot of players that from day one can step in and be a key player in a lineup.
1,000 points is impressive, but...
And 1,000 points and 500 rebounds is... 1,000 points and 500 rebounds is very impressive.
I
remember him.
Yeah, so I see a lot
of... You did.
I'm on the Twitter sphere when it comes to RMU men's basketball, and I see a lot of alumni and supporters of the team saying that he is a sure Hall of Famer in RMU men's basketball. And I disagree.
That's bold, yeah.
I know. I see a lot of them say it, and I disagree. I think that, like Temple said, he definitely will have a legacy going on because he was the hometown guy who brought the heart and the intensity for the team and was for sure the team leader for the past 4 years. He didn't have the same starting lineup any year as a player. I mean, granted, that's tough to have, but he didn't. Like, I think he played with one or two of the same guys year in and year out. Like, not the same guy all 4 years. He was the only guy to start as a freshman and finish as a senior.
I mean, he was the only – I mean, Petaway was a transfer, and he was the only other player to graduate with him.
Yeah. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he came to RMU in a tough time, and he definitely made the most out of it. He was a great player. Not a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, but will go down in the history books as being one of the finer RMU men's basketball players.
I personally will definitely remember him only because, you know, I've been here for 3 years, and he is the most consistent player that I've – obviously, he's the only player I got to see for all three of those years. I think, you know, 1,000 points, I don't care if he – I don't care if it's 8 points a game. That's impressive. 1,000 points is not done often. It's been done 13 times in RMU's history. It's not easy to do. It's really not. If it's only been done 13 times in history, it's clearly not an easy thing to do. It's clearly not a common thing to do. Especially when you also get 500 rebounds in your guard, you know, essentially. You know, you play the two or the three. I would definitely remember him. I think, you know, again, You can't criticize anything that he did effort wise.
Has he been the best RMU basketball player in your time here?
No.
I don't think that's negative towards him. Cause I mean, Deshaun Burke was a very good player. Malik Petaway is a very good player. Josh Williams is a very good player. It's not McConnell's fault that the team also had these other very good players.
Yeah, but they're not Hall of Famers.
Because they only stayed 1 or 2 years.
My issue is that I think that we talk about Matty McConnell so much is because he's from Pittsburgh, and I think that if Matty McConnell wasn't from Pittsburgh, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I disagree.
He would just be that senior that's been, you know, the heart and soul of the team, but he wouldn't be this legend that we talked about. The fact that he has 50 people from his family there every game supporting him is what makes him a legend.
I think a lot of what makes him garner attention too is the fact that his brother went to a small school in Pittsburgh, and then he made it to the NBA. And I think people had those kind of like hopes for him coming in, and I think that has something to do with it as well.
I mean, obviously the family name helps, but I'm not gonna like again, defensively, he was arguably the best defensive player every year that he was at Robert Morris. I don't think that I mean maybe Petaway this year, but again, like you said, it was him this year. I mean, I don't think you look at the defensive numbers every single year, Robert Morris. I mean, steal percentage, top 100 every single year, including his freshman year. So defensively, he was probably the best player. Effort-wise, I mean, he's a player that everybody's going to remember because he was fun to watch because of his effort, because of the emotion that he showed on the court. He was a very, very fun player to watch. I mean, when I think, you know, when you think Hall of Famer at RMU, I think what you're thinking, I think what you guys are thinking of is Hall of Famer at another school where they have guys that would get drafted into the NBA or something like that.
No, that's not what I'm thinking.
A Hall of Famer at RMU, a guy who stays 4 years at bat, a guy that stays all 4 years, something that RMU hasn't had for a while, a guy that put up good numbers.
All you have to do is play 4 years.
I think he put up good numbers. No, put up four, play all 4 years, put up very good numbers. On you know, again, and I think Curtic, you know, the fact that he never had the same lineup year after year, that is a huge thing to consider. I think he won't get in anytime soon.
Or ever.
No, I think he could definitely get in because I don't think there's a lot of other people that you would put it over him.
Well,
it's not like they've had this. It's not like RMU has had this great athletic history.
Well, then you shouldn't have anybody in the Hall of Fame.
They only have like three. Well, I don't know. They only have like one or two basketball like numbers retired.
Chipper Harris, Tarvell Anderson's not even retired yet. Yeah. You figure him and Lucky Jones are going to be two in the future.
I don't even know if Lucky Jones will.
I don't know. They made the tournament. I don't know. Matty McConnell was one NCAA tournament appearance away from being, I think, in my opinion, an RMU Hall of Famer in terms of basketball. But that never happened. And I think that because of that.
Is that his fault, though? I mean, he played good in the postseason. He never struggled in the postseason.
Oh. He struggled in the regular season, and that's how winning in the regular season helps you win in the postseason.
I mean, I don't think he struggled that bad in the regular season. I really don't.
He's a great player, and it's going to be a detriment to the team when he's not there because of, I think, all of the drama that happens with Army men's basketball, especially in the last 4 years, the amount of transfers and just like team issues that they have regarding players. I think Matty kind of helped mold that all together, just kind of make the players that were being team players kind of play together. And I think without him, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year because I don't know what will happen. Depends on who they recruit that comes in and who has the same attitude as him.
We're so used to seeing him on the team and seeing a player like him on the team that it's going to be tough to not see him on the team.
Yeah.
To see what the – it will be interesting. I agree. There's – I don't mean – It's tough for me to see another player with the fiery attitude and the emotion. And he was fun to watch. I don't think there's anyone in here that would argue that he wasn't, you know, fun to watch for these last 4 years. So, Matty, if you ever listen to this, thank you for these 4 years. Good luck in your future. If you guys don't end up going to the CIT, it's been a pleasure watching you play for these last 3 years, for these guys these last 4 years. That's all the time we have today on the Tool Shed. Thank you all for joining us again. Depending on now, this could be our last. Well, we'll have at least one more episode. We will do a March Madness special next week. If the Robert Morris men's team makes it to the CIT, there potentially could be more episodes as we will continue going on until their season ends up being over.
Officially over, yes.
But thank you guys all for joining and stay tuned next week for our March Madness special.
Let's go, Bobby Moe.